I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, I just ordered us a couple of highballs.
Honey, we don't drink.
Not the beverage, hun. These gorgeous candles from Voyage AC.
Oh.
Should we get a couple of 8-inch ones as well?
I love those highballs. They look great in front of the fireplace.
That's where I was thinking. Mm. Voyage AC has it all. Go online right now and check out their beautiful candles, their incredible fragrances, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And you know Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount. I don't like to share it, but she is willing to give it to all our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is to enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one. When you make your purchase, Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
Several times a week, Laura will turn to me after we get into bed and say those six little words I've been waiting to hear all day. Can I read something to you? Once I've said yes, she reaches for an item from her very cluttered nightstand and proceeds to bring that book, blog post, poem, essay, or article to life with her voice. I hope you enjoy listening to her read as much as I do. Here's this week's selection from Laura's nightstand.
As Scott said, this is on my nightstand, and I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins. And today I'm going to share with you a reading from Immigrant Daughter by Catherine Capon from the chapter titled Catherine's Breastovac. And here's a little bit about Catherine. She actually was a submission to On My Nightstand, and she sent us a letter that says, "Hi, Laura, I learned about your compelling podcast on the Binder's Facebook group. As the daughter of an immigrant mother who withheld her history, I often felt like the only one in the room. My new memoir, Immigrant Daughter, Stories You Never Told Me, won the Center for Fiction's Christopher Doheny Award and was shortlisted for the Del Sol Press Prize. It's a mother-daughter adventure love story that takes place in five countries. And then it goes on from there. The chapter I'm reading from is kind of right in the middle of the book. And we've learned of Catherine's mother's, Mariana is her mother's name, of her time in a tuberculosis sanatorium. Rusica is the woman who was her mother's best friend, who was also in the sanatorium with her when she was a young girl. And Catherine's gone back to visit this place after her mother passes. Some of the language will be unfamiliar to me, so I might stumble over it. And if you know the correct pronunciation, you can definitely send me a DM and correct it for me. I'm going to do my best. Now I listen to the birds rustling through the bushes. I imagine people wandering these trails, mushroom hunting in the spring, when there were primroses, cyclamen, and dog-tooth violets. I imagine the autumn when yellow and brown leaves covered the ground. There would be people picking up chestnuts. Suddenly, I could imagine the smell of roasting chestnuts. My mind turned to Rusica. She had pulled out bound collections of old movie magazines, the same ones she and my mom used to look through when they were convalescing as teenagers. We flipped through the pages, admiring the actors. Grace Kelly, Rita Hayworth, Jane Wyman, and Ingrid Bergman. And finally, I mustered up the courage to ask her about Brestovac. Her blue eyes grew grave. Her son translated, as she said. That time was a disaster for so many of us. Every week, two or three beds would open. She sighed, smoothing the white tablecloth with the palm of her hand. My mom had never talked about the dying. Rusica continued, Yerbaka, your mother's grandmother, only wanted Mariana to get better, despite herself. Despite herself, echoed in my mind. I nodded and felt a slight ache behind my heart. My mom wanted to live even if it made her die. Rusica shook her head and said, Catherine, we tried so hard to forget. We spent our whole lives trying to forget that time. Crickets trilled around me. I listened to my footsteps and checked my watch. I passed a tree with a red S painted on it. It must stand for Sestina. At least I'm on the right trail, I told myself. I paused and stared into the forest on my left. How will I know if I'm passing it if I can't see it? Shall I go off the trail? Not yet, something told me. As I walked, the thread of a spider web brushed against my cheek. I looked up at the sky and said, Mom, I could really use some help down here. I kept my steady pace, and after 5 minutes, I felt a strong presence to my left. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of something, but when I stopped and looked into the trees, there was nothing there. This happened again. The faint outline of a building appeared at the edge of my vision, but it disappeared as soon as I turned my head. I gazed into the empty space between the leaves. Is this it? I asked. Moments later, I saw a stone road on my left that branched off the trail. Once again, there was no sign. I paused, holding my breath for a few seconds. I glanced down the trail, then back at the stone road. This could be it. I could always come back and retrace my steps. I turned. After only walking a little way, I saw a small crumbling stone hut. My mom and Rusica had shared a hut when they stayed at Brestovac, but she was certain that theirs had been torn down. Maybe a few still existed. Stone crackled beneath my shoes. The road sloped upward. I glanced up and stopped abruptly. Ahead, a large four-story stone building rose from the ground on the hillside. Branches twisted through the glassless windows. Trees stretched out through a broken roof. Gray stones were piled in a heap. The building was part of the forest, fading into the trees. It was Brestovac. Oh my God, I whispered. A feeling of awe passed through me. Finally, I said aloud, I found it, to my dad across the continent and Atlantic Ocean. I scrambled up the mountainside and made my way through the brush alongside the building so that I could glimpse through one of the windows. I leaned into warm stones and peered inside. The floor had disintegrated into the earth. Large trees grew upward inside the stone building. Vines were winding up the walls. I sighed with great relief. I scanned the nearby forest and saw another building and another after that. It was like a Colorado ghost town, only made of stone. Plants brushed against my calves as I made my way to the next building. I laughed giddily. I circled behind, looking through the glassless windows. There were broken bottles on the ground, an old battered mattress, a rusty white stove. Brestovac had opened in 1909, 100 years ago. The sanatorium, in the middle of a forest and on the southern slope of the mountain, seemed a perfect spot for patients stricken with tuberculosis. The first building turned out to be too small for the increasing number of TB patients, so it was expanded twice. It had been used as a military hospital during the World Wars. At the end of World War II, Parisians killed 200 wounded soldiers here, and their bodies were probably buried somewhere nearby. My mom was about 17 when she stayed here in 1953. She escaped Yugoslavia the following year, but continued to fight the disease. In 1968, Brestovac closed. Medicine was used to treat tuberculosis instead of nature. The sanatorium was completely abandoned. I watched the shadows of branches dancing against the stone walls, geometric shapes of sunlight shifting over the earth. I wandered through one of the buildings and climbed down some stairs through the blackness until a doorway of sunlight blazed in front of me. I leaned through it and saw a small, overgrown courtyard. Vines climbed the walls. A tangle of bright green plants and weeds covered the ground. For a moment, I felt as if my story and my mother's story were intersecting. I went back up the stairs and wandered through the empty hallways until I came across a wide, curving outdoor walkway that connected one stone building to another. An open veranda shaded it. It faced down the mountain. For an instant, I saw the faint outlines of patients lying on lounge chairs, the sicker ones in cots, covered with gray woolen blankets. A nurse with a stiff white cap on her head held a tray. She bent over to give someone their medication. I could see patients playing chess, reading novels, trying to pass the time, occasionally staring into the forest. In those trees, I could see my mom walking with Rusica, arm in arm. I could hear their laughter. I could feel their fear. Here they had battled against the White Death. I turned back and retraced my steps until I made my way through another dark corridor. I glanced left and right into tiny rooms. I imagined freshly painted white walls and hospital cots. A bat burst out of a hole in the floor and flew across the ceiling. I cried out, startled. It swooped down into another room. "It's just a bat," I told myself, laughing, though my heart pounded. I was completely alone. As I explored the grounds of Brestovac, I was reminded of something that my dad once told me about climbing Mount Rainier. When he finally stood on the snow-covered top, everything below seemed so small, the rest of the world so far away. He realized that he was a tiny part of everything, and he was struck with the feeling that he didn't want to remain up there too long. There was a pull to go back down, to return to what he had left below. Outside in the sun, I stood in front of the buildings. Far in the distance was the hazy outline of Zagreb. I imagined that it must have taken my mother hours to walk from Brestovac to Zagreb when she snuck out at night. I shook my head in amazement at my mom's determination to live her life. I took a deep breath and sat cross-legged on the floor for a while. I felt a rising sensation in my chest, then calmness descended upon me. My breath became steady. I felt the stones and packed earth beneath my bare calves. I thought about why it had been so important for me to come here. As I finished graduate school, I had lost faith in myself, and my writing life seemed impossible. I wondered why I was making my mom relive everything all over again through my writing. Hadn't she suffered enough? I carried that burden. I was much closer to the dead, to the people in my stories, than the living. When I at first considered traveling to Croatia, the idea had seemed so impossible, financially, emotionally, logistically. I wondered how I could find things on my own when I didn't speak my mother's language. I had struggled through depression and severe anxiety, so I was frightened that I wouldn't be mentally strong enough to travel alone in another country. Perhaps it was the impossibility of everything a few years ago that allowed me to feel such bliss and freedom now. Rusica's voice echoed in my mind. We spent our whole lives trying to forget that time. The contradiction of everything settled upon me. My mom almost died here. She tried to keep all this separate from me. She tried hard to forget, and I needed her to remember. Even after her death, I didn't want her to suffer alone. In this way, our relationship continued. As I sat there looking at the abandoned stone buildings of Brestovac, I could finally glimpse the truth of my history. A bee buzzed, landing softly on a wildflower. A bluebell fluttered in the breeze. I traced the earth with my fingertips and felt in every molecule of the air around me that she understood. More than ever, I felt her living through me, a steady oneness. Suddenly, I realized I didn't need to know what was coming next. I knew that I'd stayed here long enough, and it was time for me to walk toward the living. On My Nightstand is a special segment of the Only One in the Room podcast. Today's episode was produced by Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, and executively produced by Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy. Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible, brand new Only One interview, and every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading from something that I love. If you have an Only One in the Room story or a piece of writing that you'd like to share, please submit it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.